Now we turn to our new series on the joys and challenges of parenting now. Mothers, fathers, and other caregivers have long tried to successfully navigate this tricky terrain full of age-old dilemmas as well as new questions. As parents' roles change, so too does the popular notion of the best way to raise children, as marketing, technology, and cultural shifts provide daily challenges. Achievement gaps open between boys and girls, and childcare costs rocket out of sight. We'll be looking at all of these topics more this week. Judy gets us started tonight with this report she recorded earlier.
That's typical family life, right? There's one snapshot when you get in the car to go on the family vacation. It's a different picture when you get out of the car after the family vacation. Good, the bad, the ugly.
To many moms and dads in this parent encouragement program, or PEP, that sentiment is all too familiar. These parents in Washington, D.C., come together once a week with leader Paige Trevor.
If you happen to be a piglet and your child is an Eeyore, spending a bunch of time trying to fix that in someone is not a good use of your parenting mojo.
Parents share their joys and their challenges.
I just needed to cool down after my girls were like doing trampolines from the beds.
Like in school, they are one thing. You know, at Nana's house, they are one person.
The ups and downs of raising children are nothing new, but in an era when both parents are often working and in many cases trying to figure out how involved they should be, this kind of help is much in demand. And these questions are getting a fresh look in a new book by journalist Jennifer Senior, titled All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood.
I see
a young mother herself, Senior asked middle-class moms and dads why it is that parenting seems more stressful than ever. One of the parents at the PEP session gave us her take on how modern parenting has changed.
The new parent style is more of an intensive parent style. It's not the laissez-faire or the, as we talk about in PEP, like the children are expected to behave or, to be seen but not heard. It's much more intensive, inclusive parenting style.
For Teresa Mason and Sean Epstein, the joys and challenges multiplied when they had twins, Stella and Lincoln, 17 months after having their firstborn, Lila. Teresa, a corporate health care attorney, and Sean, a private equity advisor, say they are fortunate to have the resources to make it easier, but they are still trying to figure out the right balance.
Most of the days I feel like I'm getting it wrong. You know, there's always one that gets more attention, you know, whether it's the kids, whether it's work, whether it's Sean. Like, I just always feel like I'm pulled in three different directions and I'm never enough for every single segment. There's no magic answer. I think it's different for every couple and the demands on each other's works and, the demands at home depending upon what they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that daily challenges start very practically with the fact that it's almost impossible to get all three dressed. But then the challenge just becomes even more practical, getting them to school on time, getting yourself to work on time, figuring out which of the two of us is actually going to get the children, and then getting them all the way through bed, getting a few minutes to enjoy being married, and getting some rest, and doing the whole thing over and over again.
Sean also notes that the role of a parent has shifted.
It seems like this generation is more concerned, from a parent's perspective, making their children happy on a constant basis. Whereas I feel like generations previously, your goal was to try to make sure your kid had food and shelter, a relatively safe community, and let them out, go play, see you at dinner time.
Ayanna Smith, who most recently worked for a nonprofit, believes a kind of competitive parenting has taken over, making it difficult to dial back. That mentality, she says, combined with careers that dominate people's lives, is a bad combination. With four-year-old Raven and another baby on the way, Ayanna, who wants to go back to work, says she and her husband have tried to refocus their family's priorities.
I was definitely stretched too thin, just not turning down any opportunity to volunteer in my community and with friends and family. Part of me got a rush out of just being overwhelmed with things to do. There's a lot of pressure on parents to feel that they're raising these perfectly well-rounded children. That can happen organically. They don't have to have every minute and moment of their day scheduled for them. And I'm not sure if we're teaching them the best lessons by doing that.
you might need to work on yourself this week. We ask a lot of our kids to be independent, healthy, balanced, plan.
Many of the moms and dads we spoke to say they want to gain a new outlook on parenting.
We take it on as another thing to understand and to conquer somehow. And so, yes, I'm here because I want to be, you know, insightful and sort of, you know, contemplative and everything, you know, thoughtful about my parenting.
You do look at Facebook and you do see that their kid is reading. He's four. Why isn't my kid reading the same exact book that he's reading? And so you put those pressures on. You got to remind yourself that you're unique.
Author Jennifer Senior joins me now to talk about the challenges of modern parenting and the way it's evolving. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So the premise of the book is that modern parenting, modern families have undergone huge changes over the last, what, half a century.
Yeah.
Talk about how, what's happened, what's changed.
Three things. I'll be brief about them. But first, choice. I know it seems very obvious to say, but we can now organize how many, we can plan how many kids we have. We can space them apart according to our desires if we want to. Back in Plymouth Colony, there were 8 kids. In 1850, there were 5 kids per family. Now there are 2. So imagine how much value we assign to each kid and what kind of value we assign to parenthood generally that we didn't before. Average age, if you are a middle-class woman, you've had a college education, you are, odds are, going to have your first kid at 30.3 years old. So just imagine how much free time you had before that and how used to your autonomy you got. So that's a big change.
And the economy has done much better. Many people are living better than they used to.
Yeah, they're living better than they used to. So, of course, like one hopes for happiness for one's kids and one hopes for a certain level of comfort for one's kids that one never did. I mean, your kids now survive.
And in the middle of all this, the role of the child and the way parents view their children has undergone a transformation.
You are now isolating what I think is the biggest change. The biggest change is the role of the child. Right through the progressive era, so let's say right through like 1920, kids worked. And this is not a particularly ethical thing, but it's how things were. Right. Which means that effectively, they were kicking money into the family till, and the more money and the more children you had, the better off your family was. They were economic assets. Once we banned child labor, it's sort of the everything inverted, and we basically started working for our kids because we now live in this world where it's very economically competitive, where income inequality is expanding. So if we want our kids to be viable and have the same chance at a middle-class life, what do? We drive them to tennis. We check their homework. We drive them to Suzuki violin. We do all these things.
And we want their lives to be even better as they can be from what their parents' lives were. At the same time, moms are working. And you write, Jennifer, in traveling around the country about how much stress this is putting on the average middle-income American.
Yes, you've named the third thing that I think is the biggest change. We work different, and namely, mothers are, you know, the vast majority of moms are now in the paid workforce. So you would think we would have rules and scripts and norms for how to handle this between husbands and wives, and we don't. And so the number one thing that husbands and wives fight about is not money, it's not sex, it's chores. I mean, think about
chores around the house.
Around the house. So just, it's the domestic division of labor. So just think about how much pressure is on this tiny couple when they're both working, odds are, right? They want to do as good a job as they can and cultivate their children as much as they can and spend, women now spend more time with their kids than they did in the 1960s. There's a fun fact for you. Cultivate their kids.
But and feel guilty about not spending even more time.
This is the great misconception. Women all think that, you know, working women in particular think that they're neglecting their children. Their mothers who are not working were spending all of their time cleaning the house and making meals and stuff, you know, keeping an impeccable house. Whereas now our houses are filthy, according to the American Timing Survey.
But
which we spend time with our kids.
Which gets to the title, all joy and fun.
There's a lot of drudgery involved in this. I mean, yeah. You know, I think moment to moment, there's been lots of convincing evidence that shows that our well-being is compromised by these strains.
And which gets to the deeper point here, Jennifer Senior, that somehow it's
it's gotten out of whack for many of us in terms of the emphasis that we place on what we need to do for our kids.
Yes, and I think actually one of the more peculiar outcomes in this situation is that we don't only feel like we need to cultivate our children and prepare them, you know, except, you know, we don't know what the world's going to look like, so, you know, we drive them all over creation and do what we can. But I think we also feel like we should be custodians of their happiness. That is a very recent development. And no less than Benjamin Spock warned that American parents were going to try and do this. In the 1960s, he saw this coming, and he said, this isn't a good idea. There is no curriculum for this. How do you make a kid happy? You know, you should teach them how to do things and how to be good people. But, I mean, happy? That's a very hard thing to teach.
And so as I ask you, what is the golden mean? let me also ask you, as you say very candidly, this is a book mainly about middle income, middle class Americans. Working class Americans in a different situation?
Depends. I mean, you know, in some ways these are high class problems. I mean, if you are going 2.5 hours each way to your minimum wage job and trying to figure out where to put your child, you know, while you're working, is that a problem? Is that a poverty problem or a parenting problem? If you're working class, if you actually have a steady wage, you know, you're slightly above. I met working class parents, and there's a couple in here who are profiled, you know, pretty extensively, who feel the exact same immense pressures and who will spend every last nickel on cultivating their kids. And also, they don't have great childcare options. Where do you put your kid? In after-school programs, that cost you money. I mean, that's what you do.
Something for all of us to think about. All right, the book is All Joy and No Fun, The Paradox of Modern Parenthood. Jennifer Senior, thank you.
Thank you.